Happy Friday, everybody. Dan Bickley here. Scott Williams alongside me. Sarah the Ruthless. Jared Carlin with you until 10 o'clock. Got some cool stuff coming your way. We're also very, very intensely focusing on the Phoenix Suns. What is this basketball team?
Where is this basketball
team?
How is this basketball team?
Yeah, we do know they're in Sacramento, California for a game against the Kings tonight. A must-win game on both sides of the ledger. And what is really, really odd about this basketball team is 2 weeks ago, they came off one of their best weeks of basketball with one sturdy victory after another. And they were building this narrative that finally, after all this work at trying to install this complicated defensive system of Frank Vogel, that finally it was sinking in. And finally, this team was morphing into a pretty good defensive team to go along with all their firepower. And everybody thought, okay, maybe we've got something here after all. And then Sunday against the Pelicans happened. And then Tuesday against the Clippers happened. And then in a victory, maybe the most alarming game at all, the Wednesday game against the Clippers, when they basically struggled, losing by 5 points to people that were either 8th through 15th on the Clippers roster. So where this team is at, we know they've got talent. Do they have heart? Do they care? They do not look connected. With you as a guy that, like I said before, who have shared locker rooms with some of the greatest players this game has ever seen, what do your instincts tell you about what's happening with this team?
Well, listen, I love me some Suns. You see, I'm wearing my Suns shirt today. I love going down watching KD. He's my favorite player in the NBA today. Oh, yeah. He has been for quite some time before he even got to the Suns. He's a gym rat, and I love that about him, and I love the fact that he likes to show up in ball and doesn't have a huge social media presence or do a whole lot of advertising the way some other superstars have in the past. But there's something off. There's something off about the chemistry of this basketball team. There's something off about the leadership of this basketball team. And I don't understand why we don't see a more focused basketball team game in and game out. It's mind-boggling to me that you can smash the Cavaliers, you can smash the Pelicans, you can smash the Nuggets, and the Spurs, yet come back and then no show when they don't have their some of their top players, mm-hmm. like the Spurs without Wimby, the Clippers the other night without James Harden or Kawhi Leonard. Those are the kind of things that lead me to think that there's not one or a group of people, and I would say people, players, in that locker room that gets this team mentally prepared to step on the floor every night. And maybe because I had the ultimate competitor in Michael Jordan early in my career, and I still have that 90s basketball mentality, no matter who you face, you got to respect those guys, and you bring your game with all your ability and all your energy and all your passion to the floor every night. And when I don't see it out of other ball clubs, especially teams that I care about so much, it bothers me.
Yeah, and it bothers a lot of people because I think there's an I've used the term hate watch to describe the mindset of a lot of Suns fans who are now watching this team, and what begins to happen from a fan standpoint is you begin to resent the tease. You begin to resent the toying with my emotions, the showing me something, getting me hype, getting me to buy in again, and then letting me down again. And then being a sports fan, I get drawn back very easily, and then you do it again, and then you do it again. And that's kind of what's happening here.
Think about where we've come in 6 months. 6 months ago, when we were going into this season with the big three, we were saying this is the most anticipated Suns season ever. This could be the most fun Suns team to watch. From the most fun Suns team to watch to hate watching.
Yeah,
over the course of a season.
And I think they're related because, again, the expectations were up here to begin the year.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah. I mean, we thought we would be one of these teams like the Nuggets, T-Wolves, and Thunders with 55 wins yep. on the season.
Yep.
Right? Battling for a number yep. one or number two seed going into the playoffs, not fighting to try to get out of the play-in round.
Yeah.
And again, I love the Suns. I love Matt Ishbia. He affords all of us former alumni so much more opportunity to come back into the fold than Robert Sarver did. And I will always have they will always have my undying support. But there is nothing worse in sports than being labeled a team that underachieves.
Yeah.
That affects everybody from the players, the coaches, the front office management, and even the ownership yeah. group. So I'm hopeful that whatever they had in the game last night and they've had in some of these other games, the good Suns, that we will see going forward and into the playoffs so they can get rid of and strip this moniker of being yeah. unsuccessful, being underachieving. They have leveraged so much of their future with these yeah. draft choices
oh, yeah.
for an opportunity to throw all their chips to the center of the table for this playoff run. They have got to figure out a way to get it right.
Because if they don't, what options does this basketball team have going forward? You couldn't possibly say, let's just run it back and get it right next year, can you?
It would have to be coaching changes, front office changes, and the equivalent of rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic changes where you're switching out the, you know, seventh, eighth, ninth guys. But there's, did you think, Scott, when this roster was assembled, so top heavy and then with a bunch of 1 year role player guys, did you think this was going to work this year?
Well, I remember I was doing a show the day of the NBA free agency opened up, and we were actually pretty excited about some of the names that they picked up in that free agency, especially day one. And I have not seen the contribution from a lot of those guys that were signed on that day, outside of, you know, Eric Gordon, and I think Bol Bol might have been added a day or two yeah. after.
And even
after
Eric Gordon
that.
Hasn't been what we were hoping.
Drew Eubanks is about the only guy that you can kind of count on for inconsistent minutes. Like, it's inconsistent production, I should say. He plays hard, doesn't always get the job done as effectively as you might like, but he gives you good energy, a good pop off of that bench. I mean, they've had to go out and get Thaddeus Young since then. They've had to go out and get Isaiah Thomas. So it just made me think that, wow, all those guys that we were talking about, we were so high on that first few hours of free agency, have just not worked.
No. And here's the other thing that that people have been kind of gravitating towards in the last game against the Clippers, the one they won, and that is their shot selection in the game, particularly in the first quarter. To attempt 53 pointers in a game, to attempt 20 in the first quarter, it was jarring to the people who watch. Now, I have been on record as saying, I wish the Suns would have done this from day one. In retrospect, I wish they would have maybe brought in Mike D'Antoni or some offensive-minded coach and said, let's lean into this. Let's create an offensive system. To hell with defense. Just run and gun and shoot. And in game 80, it looks like they tried. But some people read it as they did that out of spite. They did that because their coach has been telling them, yap, 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 shoot more threes, shoot more threes, shoot more threes. And their response was, okay, you want to see what that looks like? Here's what it looks like. I don't know. Anything's on the table.
Yeah, and hopefully they get on a roll. And if you want to rock and roll, perhaps you want to see Def Leppard and Journey,
ooh,
who are bringing the 2024 Summer Stadium Tour to Phoenix on August 23rd. Head to the contest page right now on ArizonaSports.com for your chance to win tickets.
I want to go to that show.
Okay.
Devin Booker, the word chillin'. What does it all mean? We're going to try to get to the bottom of that next. Scott Williams filling in for Vinny. I'm Dan Bickley. You're listening to Arizona Sports, the local sports league.
Gamble. We're almost there. The end of the NBA regular season. How pivotal is tonight's game for the Suns against the Kings? We'll get you ready starting at 2 on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
All right, Devin Booker, the star of Valley Sports, the number one guy for all intents and purposes. This is his town. A lot of people in the Valley still trying to get their head around what came out of his mouth after that loss to the Clippers. Now, before we get into this, we'll say that he was much more engaged. In the last game, he led the team to the win against the Clippers.
Came out right away first quarter.
Established himself, then also closed the deal at the end. So a much more engaged Devin Booker, but the scene in the post game after that loss to the Clippers was really a jarring moment for the sports.
I'll play it again just in case anyone didn't hear this soundbite we're referring to. This is after the loss to the Clippers, where of course they started off 35-4, I believe was the score, just a horrible thing. And this was the post game.
What's the level of frustration like right now?
Chilling. Another chance tomorrow.
In our interview, and I'm talking about this today because I also can't get out of my head our interview with Kellen Olsen, who covers the Suns very, very well for ArizonaSports.com. He said in his mind there were three alternatives as to why Devin Booker said what he said, and none of them lead to a good place. Didn't elaborate, but I think we can all kind of fill in the blanks as we go along here. Because it is his point that Devin Booker has been in the league, 9 years now? Is it 9? Okay, it's 9 years now. He's very smart. He knows the game. He knows how comments like that are being interpreted. That was not a mistake. So why did that word come out of his mouth? I'll tell you what people are afraid of. People are afraid of that is the first sign of a disengaged player who is going to ask out because he wants to get to someplace else. Now, before you yell at me and say, come on, man, that's Devin Booker. He's not going to do that. Most everybody does do that in the NBA these days. And then adding to the pot was what Bill Simmons said.
Yeah, this is from Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about the Knicks and their offseason and Devin Booker. Mm-hmm. Three quick cuts here I'll play.
Okay.
When I think about the Knicks big picture, I think of Bridges and I think of Booker. And I know, Booker's never leaving Phoenix. I just don't believe people are in the same place ever in the NBA anymore. We've been burned so many different times. And if I'm the Knicks, who's going to be unhappy end of April?
Then we got this.
We have so many good teams now. There's going to be a couple teams that are just like, holy, we just lost in the first round in 5 games. Or, oh my God, we didn't even get out of the play-in. We just spent $250 million on our roster. And I think Phoenix is a good candidate for that. It already seems kind of unhappy when you watch him. Like, I thought that Phoenix Cleveland game last night was like, it was like the unhappy All-Star game. At various times, I was worried about the state of mind of both teams.
And then finally.
And then there's the Durant piece too, which we have to mention, Sean. You just have to. Because he does that interview podcast with Rich Kleiman, which I thought was hilarious to do a podcast with your manager. But And he's like, I told you we should have done the Knicks. And Katie's like, I know, you were right. And I'm like, all right. So now the door is open now for the Knicks that they're just even talking about that. And I just wonder, like, if the Suns thing goes badly this year, did the Knicks come to the rescue?
Yeah, that's kind of like an old fear coming back to life.
I was just going to say, it's been a few years.
Yep.
Well, we used to hear this all the time.
Yep.
When Devin Booker says, chillin', we got another one tomorrow. One thing I know about him, he does not talk when he's pissed.
Yes.
And like he'll walk away from media at the end of the season without making a comment. And that was about the shortest comment he could make as he got onto the team bus, headed to the team plane to fly to LA after the game. The good news is, like you said, he played.
Yes.
He balled out on Wednesday after that Tuesday, travesty. But 37 points. And he finished the game. Like, they were just a 2-point game going into that final fourth quarter, and as we know, the Suns have had major problems in the fourth quarter. They won that fourth quarter 32-15. So was it the Clippers guys that normally play 6 minutes getting tired in the fourth quarter. You know, they got Highland and Boston were killing them, and then they got tired down the stretch, and the Suns won? Or did the Suns figure out a recipe to finally be able to put a team away in the fourth quarter? Because it didn't look like they shot nearly as many threes in the fourth quarter as they did in that first quarter when they shot 20. They were driving the ball to the basket. They were getting to the foul line. They were getting their fast break game going. Those are the types of things you make winning plays. So you think, well, has the team checked out? Are they disengaged? Are they not trying to fight for that sixth spot? Or then just happy to be in the play-in? I don't know. I still think there's some fight in Booker regardless of the comment that he made, because to me, the dude's a pro. Maybe just had a bad game and... Okay, I'm ready to get this bad taste out of my mouth Wednesday night. Let's get on a plane. Let's head to L.A.
Well, I was going to say, on the Booker thing, I don't think anything would get blown up after this year. I would think they would give the big three one more year. But after that, you talked about earlier, the Suns have no draft picks going forward. The Suns have these huge contracts and not a lot of room to make other moves. I would think anything could be on the table after next year.
Yeah. Listen, I would think anything could be on the table moving pieces around Devin Booker. I wouldn't, if this thing flames out, I wouldn't be surprised if they try to move KD again. I wouldn't be surprised if Bradley Beal wants to go someplace else. There's no joy on this basketball team. So who would want to be a part of this if nothing substantial changes? That's a question. You bring up a very, very good point. There are times when Devin Booker loses and his response is not the most polished. There are times when he just will not verbally concede and he just doesn't want any part of it. And maybe that is why that word that hit people so inappropriately, chilling, like, come on, dude, you're the leader here. This is your team. This is your town. Give us something more than that. Tell us everything is going to be okay. What would Michael Jordan have done after losing, being down 35-4 in the first half?
Oh, my God. You know, first of all, he would have given it to everybody involved there on the squad. That's just unacceptable. I can't even imagine being down 35-4 with a Jordan-led team, because he would have stopped passing the basketball and said, you guys don't want to play, I'll do it myself. And he probably could have brought the team back and not ever let it get to that point to begin with. But I just don't think that the – and I've been filling in for with you guys for a while now. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about leadership, like, who is that guy or who is that group of guys? And it doesn't always have to be your star player, but who's that guy that really just shakes the team and grabs them by the lapel and says, this is unacceptable?
That's it. They don't have him. That's one of the fundamental issues here. And it's not the head coach. I mean, we've seen the one guy I've seen barking at this team is David Fizdale. And it happened once.
Take that for data.
Yeah. So listen, that's a key element here. When you hear Charles Barkley diagnose this team, he says very, very distinctly, as if people are talking to him, the leaders aren't leading. What does that mean? That means Devin Booker and Kevin Durant don't believe in where this team is going, in whatever is presented to them, so they are not pushing this thing forward. Look, they've got two games here to try to make this right, because if this is truly a broken team that wants to get out of each other's space and be done with each other, we're going to see it on the court the next couple of games. As I said yesterday, a playoff series, it's going to force this team to reconcile some of this stuff. You don't want to go into a best of against anybody if you're going to get embarrassed. I don't know, man. This has been one crazy, crazy basketball.
You know what else is crazy?
What, Jared?
The fact that we, as a station, are giving away tickets to one of the biggest series of the year.
Arizona Sports, D-backs, Cubs, ticket giveaway.
All right, what number, guys?
Pick a caller number, Scott.
Let's go 10.
10.
Caller number 10. Call in right now, and you will get tickets to the Diamondbacks-Cubs series next week. 602-260-9870.
All right, coming up on the other side, we'll reset your morning. The Rush Hour reboot with the one and the only Sarah Gazelle coming up next. Scott Williams in for Vinny. I'm Dan Bickley. You're listening to Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting. Arizona built for America's dreams.
Welcome into the Rush Hour Reboot, everybody. Here on Bickley and Murata Mornings on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Happy Friday, everybody. Yes, Scott is feeling it in for Vince Murata today. And Dan Bickley is here as well. Hi, Dan Bickley.
Hello.
Hello.
What's Jared going Carlin on, Sarah?
Here. Hi. Hey, Jared, what's your thing?
Do you
what
disappear?
Is Gina's deal?
She wasn't feeling Scott Williams. I'd tell you that much.
Was that the last time you were on, Scott?
That was last.
I just pulled my headphones out of the deal. Bickley, you don't know that story,
do you? No, I don't. Should I know that story?
Gina Snelland.
A tease like the Phoenix Suns. Yes. I believe is the comparison you were making. The men and Gina on this.
I had a big crush on Gina Snelland in high school, but she was not giving me the time of day.
Oh, boy.
Now, is that why you had a crush on her?
No, no,
here,
she was hot. She was
hot. Let's talk about it. Okay.
I had a crush on her.
It's not that deep. She was just hot. Yeah.
So she was, she teased
her. Booty.
She played.
Seriously.
All right. All right.
She played with his emotions, much like the Phoenix Suns did.
Yeah. How that got broke up. Oh, indeed. All right. This is the Rush Hour Reboot, where we tell you maybe more than you need to know.
Yeah, it's possible.
About Valley Sports and beyond. All right. Let's get you caught up on the top stories of the day. We are starting with the Phoenix Suns here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. It's the final countdown. Is it a countdown if it's just two games left? Is that much of a countdown?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. I think so.
So we are in the final countdown. Two games left before the postseason. They are in Sacramento tonight to play the Kings and then at Minnesota to play the Timberwolves on Sunday. Running down the standings right now, Suns are seventh in the West, one game back of the Pelicans at six. They do hold the tiebreaker over New Orleans, so there is still a path for the Suns to leapfrog the Pelicans and nab that sixth spot. Here is Suns coach Frank Vogel after the Suns beat the Clippers on Wednesday. He says the Suns really want to get into the top six, but they also know that they can make it out of the play-in as well.
Yeah, the seeding is, you know, we're going to win as many games as we can, and we'll be confident wherever we land. If we end up in a top six, which is preferred, obviously, for all of us, we'll be confident with whatever matchup that we face. And if we end up in the play-in, we'll be confident that we go and win that game and secure whoever seed that leads to us. But, you know, we're focusing on the process and let the results take care of themselves.
All right, if the Suns want to get the sixth seed, they have to win both of their games this weekend, again, at the Kings and the T-Wolves, and then the Pelicans will have to lose at least one of their games this weekend. They've got the Warriors and the Lakers. Do you think that, let's start with the Suns first before we worry about the Pelicans. Do you think that the Suns can beat both the Kings tonight and the T-Wolves on Sunday?
I definitely do. I think that they match up real well against the Timberwolves. I think they don't have really any fear of them. I think tonight's going to be the trickier game, but the Kings are coming. This is the second of a back-to-back. So there's a lot of little things that seem to point to, this is possible. But to me, once again, it's really a matter of want to. If this basketball team cannot find some level of connectivity, then you might see it on the court tonight and Sunday. Okay. You might see a team that is looking for the fast exit out of this whole deal.
The 1-2-3 combo?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds really, really extreme, but what else would explain some of this stuff? So, I think you'll see in their level of locked-in-ness. Yes.
What do you think?
I'm a little afraid of what Coach Vogel said there, who knows more basketball. He probably forgotten more basketball than I'll ever know. But if they don't get this sixth seed, and say they drop to the eighth seed, and they got the Denver Nuggets in the first round. Well, I don't think they match up well against the Denver Nuggets, and that's what I'm afraid of. If you can get the sixth seed, Denver finishes first, you can avoid them in that first round. I think they got to be hell-bent on getting these next two basketball games and hoping
that
the Pels slip up and give them a game.
I would think the Pels' chances of losing tonight are pretty good.
to the Warriors,
a good team
in San Francisco,
in a hostile building.
And the Warriors are rolling hot right now.
On the second of a back-to-back.
Yeah, and I'm afraid, too, because if they don't lose that game, the Lakers may just
tap out.
They realize, hey, we're not going to improve either 9th or 10th.
Yep.
We'll take our chances there. We're going to sit AD. We're going to sit LeBron. And then they have no chance of getting any help on Sunday against the Lakers.
That's exactly right.
If I'm counting correctly, I think the Warriors have won 9 of their last 10.
Mm.
And that's the Pelicans' opponent tonight in San Francisco. So for scoreboard watching purposes, the Pelicans and the Warriors tip off first at 7 o'clock, and then at 7:30 the Suns and the Kings tip off right up the road in Sacramento. All right, we have to get to Major League Baseball. Some wild developments in this Shohei Ohtani situation with his now ex-interpreter and, we assume, former best friend, Ipe Mizuhara. Yesterday, federal officials announced in a Los Angeles court that Mizuhara has been charged with bank fraud. He reportedly, according to this affidavit, transferred more than $16 million out of Ohtani's bank account to an illegal sportsbook. The initial number from the first report a few weeks ago was $4.5 million. Now it's $16 million. One of the attorneys involved said there's no evidence that Ohtani knew about Mizuhara's gambling or the fact that he was taking funds from Ohtani. Listen to this from ESPN's Alden Gonzalez. According to the affidavit filed yesterday, the massive gambling problem spanned from December 2021 to January of this year. Mizuhara made approximately 19,000 bets. He won a net of $142 million and lost $183 million.
Ooh, that's a math problem.
$40 million of gambling debt. Mizuhara would apparently pose as Shohei Ohtani when calling the banks to try and authorize even more bank transfers. And given his $40 million in gambling debts, his relationship with this sports bookie started to sour. In November of 2022, Mizuhara repeatedly texted the bookmaker asking for more gambling credit. He wrote over text, "I'm terrible at this sports betting thing, huh? Lol, any chance you can bump me again? As you know, you don't have to worry about me not paying."
Oof.
Oh my goodness.
Here's the final headline, and then I'll let you guys react. Text messages from the filing show that in November of 2023, so just a few months ago, the relationship between Mizuhara and the bookmaker changed. The bookmaker texted Mizuhara, "I don't know why you're not returning my calls. I'm here in Newport Beach and I see him," being Shohei Ohtani, "walking his dog. I'm just going to go up and talk to him and ask how I can get in touch with you since you're not responding to me.
Uh-oh.
Call me back immediately."
Oh, boy.
Your reaction.
And some of those text messages are really, really, they're a viewpoint right into the window of addiction. "Hey, man, listen, can you just front me? I swear it's the last time. Can you just front me a little
more? You know I'm good for it.
You know I'm good for it." I really wonder now if this has been a slow reveal to Shohei Ohtani, because we all know when the story broke, they were still chumming it up in the dugout pretty good. And a lot of people thought, how's that possible? If that dude stole that much money from you, how's that possible? Yeah, the conspiracy theorist in me really wonders how this story took such a 180-degree turn, but I think a lot of those messages that have been issued in that complaint or that report, whatever, make it pretty clear that this guy robbed his friend blind.
Yeah,
I think these gambling sites, they have these 800 numbers if you need help for a reason. And listen, sports gambling does make the games that you can't get to more fun. But like anything, it can become an addiction. And I'm hoping that there'll be some good education that goes along down the road to help with all these sites that have really popped up over the last 3 years.
How about it? Yeah. All right, thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it. You have been rebooted.
Rebooted.
All right, coming up next on the other side, NFL fans, we are going to visit with draft expert Bucky Brooks. Jared did a promo for Bucky Brooks, didn't you?
I did, yes.
He's a dork.
For today's show, because people want to hear.
Sounds like a Western what?
It sounds like a cowboy's name, right? Bucky Brooks.
Gunslinger. From the mind of, exactly. He's next.
NFL Network coming up.
There you go. Scott Williams in for Vinny. I'm Dan Bickley. You're listening to Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Wolf, Luke's and Coachella, and Calvisi's Consulting. So what kind of draft knowledge will he school us on? None. We get going at 10 a.m. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
Welcome back. Happy Friday, everybody. Dan Bickley here. Scott Williams filling in for Vinny. The NFL draft within a couple of weeks. And the Cardinals sitting in a really interesting place. Our great pleasure to talk about this with former player NFL Network's Bucky Brooks. Bucky, what's happening?
What's up, Bucky?
Hey, what's going on? Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you so much for joining us. We do appreciate that. A lot of excitement in the Valley about controlling the NFL draft with the number four pick. Do you believe that four spot might be a very interesting position to be in with teams wanting to trade up to the Cardinals to get that pick from them?
I mean, I think it's interesting for the Cardinals because either they're going to land a blue chip player or they're going to get valuable draft assets because someone wants to trade up. The Cardinals have to be ready and prepared to pick because we may speculate on the outside that someone wants to get in to that four hole to take a talented quarterback, but everyone may not see the quarterbacks in the same light. So but it will be interesting to see what Monty Austin Ford elects to do with the fourth overall pick.
Bucky, if you put on your general manager hat for a while, if you had the opportunity and say you don't get the offer you want, you got to get the wide receiver to go out there with Kyler Murray. Is the big guy from Ohio State with all of his red zone touchdowns, is he the way to go with Marvin Harrison Jr.? Is he just clearly better than the other two receivers? Or do you try to trade back down from them? Did you try to do it one of the other receivers and get another pick?
I think they all are very closely graded. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is special, but I think those other guys are also pretty good. Malik Nabers and Rome Odunze. A lot of it depends on what do the Cardinals want as their number one receiver. I would say that in most years, Marvin Harrison Jr. would be the number one receiver in any system, any style, any draft class, just because of the way he plays. I think he's very similar to Larry Fitzgerald in terms of how he dominates and how he does it. I would say in maybe a subtle, quiet fashion. Malik Nabers gives them a player with electrifying playmaking ability. I mean, this guy has the energy. He scores from anywhere on the field. He can do it in a spectacular fashion. And then Rome Odunze is kind of that physical Jamar Chase type, kind of overwhelms you, wears you down over the course of the game. Hard to bring down when he catches the ball in space, and smart as a whip because he can line up in any position. So really good options, really good choices available.
Now, you mentioned about the four spot, and if a team is looking into that quarterback, as somebody who watched the Michigan football, I'm kind of astounded and yet not really astounded at the momentum behind J.J. McCarthy. How does he grade out as a quarterback in your opinion?
I mean, I think he's a really good player. I think what everyone has to understand for a four-star, five-star recruit to decide that, hey, I want to go to Michigan where I can be the complement to what they do offensively, not I'm the driving force. To me, speaks volumes about his mentality, his willing to sacrifice. They talk about being a team-friendly environment. At Michigan, he was the leader of that. And so he has all the things that go along with being the winner guy because that's how he'd be perceived in this draft class. But he's also athletic and talented enough to make things happen when he had to. You look at the third down tape that you always can assess when you're a scout. I mean, he makes big-time throws. He makes big-time plays. When he's been tasked with doing it, he just hasn't been asked to do it a lot. I don't know if you can ding him for, like, people not being able to force him in the longer situations. You have to grade him for what he was. And for what he was, is a really, really good college prospect.
Cardinals need an edge rusher. They need somebody to get after the quarterback. Give me a name or two that you like that can get after the quarterback and start giving us those sacks.
Depends on when they want to take him. If they want to take him early, I mean, obviously the board is yours. If you talk about, like, waiting and until later in the draft, then later in the first round, then it becomes a little dicier. I would say, like, the guys that they talk about as pass rushers, it'd be in no particular order. Jared Verse, Dallas Turner, Laiatu Latu. Those three guys can get it done. They can get it done in a variety of ways. They can win with force or finesse off the edge, and those guys should be legitimate studs. If it comes down the line, then you start talking about Adarius Robinson, who comes from Missouri, who's more of a high-effort energy guy that can make it happen because he wears you down as an inside or outside player. You think about Child Robinson as a elite athlete who has tremendous first-step quickness and burst, just doesn't have a lot of production because he hasn't played a ton. So there are guys to be had in the opening stages of the draft. You just got to know exactly what you're looking for at that position.
Yeah, about it. Now, the Cardinals also need a shutdown corner. How does the market look for that in terms of the draft picks and potential?
I mean, there's some good corners. I don't know about shutdown corners. I think we kind of loosely affix that to anybody. But, look, there are a lot of guys that can play on the island. Going to the top of the board, Quinyon Mitchell can certainly play. Batarian Arnold offers position flexibility inside, outside, can do a bunch of different things. You have other guys like Kool-Aid McKinstry, who's been a brand name for a while, who has solid technique, may not be the fastest, but is really, really good doing what he does on the perimeter. And then Nate Wiggins is super fast, super fluid. Turns and transitions are easy, but he's 175 pounds, and that might be an issue when it comes to defending the run.
Yeah, it sounds like a good year for some of the premium positions in the NFL for draft prospects. All right, last question for you. Theoretically, conceivably, conceptually, where do you fall on this? So if the Cardinals are sitting at four and they've got access to what might be a generational player, say you trade out of that, say you trade with Minnesota, now you've got the 11, the 23, you've got the 27 that was the Texans pick. Where do you fall on the quantity versus quality argument? Is there a danger in getting too far back with not being able to get back up if you so choose?
Yeah, and that's the danger trying to get cute when it comes to picks and all this other stuff. I would say that the best way to do this is take the best player. So if you're in range to get the best player, the player that you have targeted on your board, get him, because there's nothing like regretting missing out on a player that you wanted, who plays and tears it up in the league, and you don't get him because you tried to acquire an extra pick that oftentimes doesn't lead to a player that's really going to make your team.
Yeah, that is certainly the cautionary tale. Bucky, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Have a good weekend.
All right, thanks for having me.
See, but Bucky Brooks from the NFL Network, former player, joining us. The NFL draft's going to be full of intrigue like it always is. All right, we're midway through the show. Coming up next on the other side, it is the Bickley Blast. That's next on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.